as I open the door, he turns and says, "I love you," not to me, but calling back to his friend who is departing. Only he said it looking at me, closest to me, which is unintended love, random love, love that should be spread throughout the world, shouted in our ears for free.
Welcome to the 10th episode of Rice Pudding Poetry, which we're publishing just a couple of days after Valentine's Day. Our featured guest, former Maine Poet Laureate Stuart Kestenbaum, has brought us poems of great heart and generous vision. And since rice pudding wouldn't be rice pudding without our community readers, we're also grateful to welcome Emma Dawson Webb, John Shea, Alice Timmons, and Joanne Connolly, who have brought us the work of other poets writing on love's twin gifts of joy and heartbreak. I'm your host, Kimberly Green, and I'm so glad you've joined us for this show, which is itself a Valentine for all of you who are listening. Some years ago, I heard the recording of a reading by the poet Ada Limón, who opened by describing a conversation she'd overheard between two poets she admired. They were decrying any and all love poetry, saying they would never write love poems, not ever. Ada said to her audience, and I quote, "I had to sort of sit down and think about that. I mean, I think every poem I've ever written is a love poem. And I'm probably just going to continue to write love poems for the rest of my life." End quote. Limón's commitment makes sense to me. Isn't every poem deep down cherishing something? The music you'll hear on this show is arranged and performed by our friend and neighbor Kent Allen. When I asked him to join us, I imagined he'd play piano or guitar. On this show, he plays both, and bass as well. Kent's familiar to many of you as a composer, instrumentalist, singer, and music teacher who's been performing, recording, and teaching in the Seacoast area since the late 70s. He's helping us create the mood for this Valentine by performing his original arrangements of traditional and popular love songs, many of which you'll recognize. Let's kick things off with the traditional tune Frankie and Johnny, which segues into Makin' Whoopee by Walter Donaldson.
Thank you.
Our featured poet, Stuart Kestenbaum, is the author of 6 collections of poems, most recently Things Seem to be Breaking, which was published by Deerbrook Editions in 2021. He was the host of the main public radio program Poems from Here and the host curator of the podcasts Make Time and Voices of the Future. Stuart has written and spoken widely on craft and creativity, and his poems and writing have appeared in numerous publications, including Tikkun, The Sun, the Beloit Poetry Journal, the New York Times Magazine, and on The Writer's Almanac and American Life in Poetry. He served as Maine's Poet Laureate from 2016 to 2021. Stuart's reading follows Kent's arrangement of Let Me Call You Sweetheart by Leo Friedman.
Going to be reading to you poems that deal with love. This is the month of February, the month of Valentine's Day, and when Kimberly first spoke with me about a theme, this seemed like a very apt one, but as I began to think about it, I began to think maybe not so much poems of romantic love, but maybe looking at different kinds of love. And then it occurred to me, probably every poem is about love at its heart, trying to get to the deepest emotion and what it means to the writer. But here's a series of poems. The first one actually does deal with romantic love. It's called Guest Room, and it's from my book, House of Thanksgiving. Guest Room. We always kept snapshots in an old shoebox, not an album, so every descent into the past was an archaeological dig through family history. Generations were entwined, making fathers into sons and dead into the living. How many more years before you and I are only photographs, at first fondly remembered, and then added to the confusion, mistaken for a cousin or a brother? In the guest room at my mother's house, we are surrounded by these images on the walls, nieces and nephews, eternally in elementary school, my recently engaged grandparents by lamplight, looking toward a long-gone future. All those eyes looking on us as we sleep on the fold-out couch. Dare we make love with so many watching? At dawn, I stir and find I am sleeping with my front to your back. My hand cups your breast, and I feel your heart flutter right into my palm over the beat of my own pulse. How delicate holding this fragile bird in my hands. Where does it rest? Where does it fly to? We only know that it will fly from us, and this is a story whose end we can't change, but we can make up the middle, the improvisations of our tongues, all the new languages we learn to speak. This next poem deals with love in a in a different way. It's really looking at familial love and love that goes from generation to generation, how we remember one another. And it's also from my book, House of Thanksgiving, and it's called Remembrance. Remembrance. I place a stone of memory on my father's grave, wipe the marker clean of the residue of fallen leaves. I see that the grave is heaved up higher than the place reserved for my mother, a mound that reminds me of his barrel chest. We don't talk as much as acknowledge each other in this spring morning when the daffodils make yellow gestures of hope in the awakening grounds. Each flower remembers, but it remembers only for the first time. Or is it the plant that remembers and the flower that is a celebration of memory? Or is it the earth that remembers and wakes up the plant? Or do the roots have a dim memory, like a family sitting around a dining room table after a holiday meal, pushing back their chairs a little too full? A conversation begins, and the uncle's recollection turns into the sister's memory, into the child's dream, back to the grandmother vanishing into the white, so white tablecloth stained with those things that feed us while we are here. This next poem is from my book, Only Now, and it's called Within We Are Full of Light. And when I was writing this, I was thinking about those things that are inside of us that we don't know, maybe are more deeply embedded than we realize. And maybe in some ways, every poem wants to explore that, wants to get to that place of discovery. Within, we are full of light. Imagine the wonderment of the people who built the first camera obscura and discovered that a stream of light can tell us so much, how one tiny hole in the wall can let in the wavelengths that draw a perfect picture. It's upside down, which shakes us up, but also shows us that something is watching us too, inscribing each detail, steeple and leaf, hill and cloud, making every color possible. And this morning, when I go outside and stare into the spring light being absorbed and bouncing off the gray stone walk and new dandelions, I become my own darkened room, letting the day in to write its history on the back wall of my mind. Light within, light without, I close my eyes to see what I've loved. This next poem is a kind of a love poem that was conceived of in the form of a prayer from my book, Prayers and Run-On Sentences. It's a series of prayers that I wrote that I wanted to be kind of devotional in the sense of exploring some inner world in a way that had reverence to it. This poem is called Prayer in the Strip Mall, Bangor, Maine. The week after Thanksgiving, and the stores are decked out for holiday shopping, including a TJ Maxx, where what was once too expensive loses its value and attracts us. There's a store with a big yellow banner proclaiming giant book sale, a seasonal operation of remaindered books, which doesn't mean that the books aren't good, only that the great machinery of merchandising didn't engage its gears in quite the right way, and I buy two books of poetry and am leaving the store, the first snowstorm of the winter on the way. And as I get to the glass double doors, a bearded man with a cane is entering. He has been walking with a woman who is continuing on to another store, and he has the look that can make him either eccentrically brilliant or just plain simple. And as I open the door and he opens the other side, he turns and says, I love you, not to me, but calling back to his friend who is departing. Only he said it looking at me, closest to me, which is unintended love, random love, love that should be spread throughout the world, shouted in our ears for free. I think when I began to think about the idea of love, I began to think of it as a kind of journey, and that the love that you A way that you understand love is that you're able to love and you're able to accept love, which means, in a sense, loving yourself, not in an egotistical way, but trusting the deepest, truest part of yourself. This poem is from my book, Only Now, and it's called Getting There. Where is the place we are always thinking about? It's the country we remember in our dreams. Where is where we'll find out what we need to know, whatever that is, whatever we thought it was going to be. Suddenly, the answer will be there, to which we'll say, where on earth did that come from? And it will have come from deep inside us, the place we didn't even know existed, where all the answers are waiting patiently. We are amazed that an answer so vibrant, so without pretense, so right, could have existed inside us, as if this is the job of some organ within our bodies, to produce things we knew all along but didn't recognize, like some quiet street or trail where we are walking and someone is calling out our name, where we stop to listen and can hear what was there all along, the water dropping from leaf to leaf, the syncopation of air and green and small birds that are hidden in the branches, singing the only song they know, over and over and over and over, into the twilight where the world merges into one color, one shade, and one breath. This next poem is called Love Lesson, and it's from my book, How to Start Over. And part of the structure of the book was I had written to friends from various fields, people I knew, and asked them to send me words that I would then include in a poem. Nobody knew what words the other people were going to send, so essentially I got a collection of random words that I became the form of each of the poems. And they generally had a pretty wide range because some people were scientists, some were writers, some were artists, some family members. So in this poem, which is called Love Lesson, the words that I was given were sweetheart, clove, kerf, sororal, chocolate, idolatry, spatula, transfer, avenue, and arbor. So it made an interesting framework. They weren't my words, but they became mine. Love lesson. When you find your sweetheart sitting under the arbor, the pollen heavy in the air, resist temptation. Don't transfer all your insecurities onto her, and don't make your life an exercise in idolatry, worshiping beyond belief. We've all been down those avenues before. Food may be the way to the heart. Insert fragrant cloves into oranges or make her chocolate. Melt it in the oven and slide the spatula beneath, as if you're slipping into that once hot, now cooling space where love evolves, where the kerf of your emptiness fits perfectly with her expanding soul. You will be sororal and sexual at once. Two tongues, one language. And the last poem I'm going to read is a poem called Kingdom of Beauty. And for 5 years, I was Maine's poet laureate. And one responsibility was to write poems for occasions. It actually only happened once toward the end of my tenure, but it was that I was called on to do that. It was Maine's bicentennial in 2020. Just as the pandemic was starting. So I actually never got to deliver this poem, but it was a poem about Maine. And I think for me, it's a kind of a love poem to the state where I've lived for many, many years and how much I've come to appreciate the spirit of generosity and the spirit of ingenuity, I think, that informs the lives of people in Maine. Kingdom of Beauty. There are so many beauty salons in Maine. You see them everywhere. in old brick buildings of refurbished downtowns, in strip malls, in trailers, in cities and villages. Our beauticians must be doing more than cutting hair. They must be making beauty itself. How else to explain its abundance all around us? The way the first light of morning touches the tops of the spruce trees across the harbor, or a mackerel sky blankets the heavens, or the way the fog drifts over the barnacles, working quietly in the waves without us. How else to account for the blue light in the deep snow, the soft drift of fallen apple blossoms in May's air, or the crimson of the blueberry barrens where glacier boulders work their slow way over the land? Even if our beauticians haven't manufactured all of this, and we gratefully acknowledge the touch of the divine hand wherever we look, they remind us that our hands can help make beauty too. We can see the evidence everywhere, in the circles of burned rubber made by the pickups dancing over the blacktop, in the curve of a canoe's bow rippling a silent lake, in the space inside the split ash basket, in the prayer of a white steeple, in the patched quilt on the bed, in the sure way an elegant knot is tied to hold a load on a trailer. For aren't work and beauty a partnership? Think of the hands that held the chisels and wedges to build foundations of granite block. Let us praise the ingenuity it takes to cut and lift and place ancient stones to bear the weight of the present and the future. 200 years later, a house still standing, faithfully greeting today's light.
Thank you, Kent, for your lovely renditions of In the Good Old Summertime by George Evans and the African-American spiritual Down by the Riverside. And thank you, Stuart, for your warm and generous reading. I have several of your poetry collections on my bookshelf and know you have many more, sometimes funny, brave, always moving poems about love. You can buy Stuart's newest book, Things Seemed to Be Breaking, at your local bookstore, or you can buy it directly through his publisher, Deerbrook Editions, at www.deerbrookeditions.com. Stuart's other wonderful collections are also available from your local bookseller or online. In this next part of our show, community readers share poems that make clear the ways love lives in memory, in loss, in place, and in our capacity for surprise. Kent's arrangement of George Gershwin's Embraceable You and Harry Dacre's Daisy Bell are woven through these wonderful readings. Listen.
I'm Emma Dawson Webb, and I'm a senior at Trape Academy in Kittery, Maine. I have spent most of my short life as both a writer and appreciator of poetry. An appreciator, in particular, of the ways a simple string of words can capture the smallest details and rituals in wondrous and fresh ways. This is what Gwendolyn Brooks' poem, When You Have Forgotten Sunday, A Love Story, does so well. I recently listened to Brooks, a Pulitzer Prize winner, read her poem and was struck by the way she nearly sang it and danced over the words. It was beautiful and also felt somehow contradictory to the nostalgic resignation that I saw in the words. But this is exactly what gives the poem life. There's a stark loneliness next to warm memories. In a time that's been rife with confusing opposites and uncertainty, I find that this poem gently brings us back to the idea of routine and its interconnectedness with love. When You Have Forgotten Sunday, A Love Story by Gwendolyn Brooks. And when you have forgotten the bright bedclothes on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and most especially when you have forgotten Sunday, when you have forgotten Sunday halves in bed, or me sitting on the front room radiator in the limping afternoon, looking off down the street to nowhere, hugged by my plain old wrapper of no expectation and nothing I have to do and I'm happy, why? And if Monday never had to come, when you have forgotten that, I say, and how you swore if somebody beeped the bell, and how my heart played hopscotch if the telephone rang, and how we finally went in to Sunday dinner. That is to say, went across the front room floor to the ink-spotted table in the southwest corner. To Sunday dinner, which was always chicken and noodles, or chicken and rice, and salad, and rye bread, and tea, and chocolate chip cookies. I say, when you have forgotten that, when you have forgotten my little presentiment that the war would be over before they got to you, and how we finally undressed and whipped out the light and flowed into bed and lay loose-limbed for a moment in the weekend. Bright bedclothes, then gently folded into each other. When you have, I say, forgotten all that, then you may tell, then I may believe, you have forgotten me well.
My name is John Shea, and as of this past August, my home is in Kittery, Maine. I will be reading a poem by Samantha DeFletch for our anniversary. Sam is a Pennsylvania native who now lives in Portsmouth. Her first book of poetry, titled Confluence, was published last year, and she and her work were recently featured on this show. I may have been drawn to her work because I am also a Pennsylvania native who eventually came to settle in this area, and I do also love gas stations. But what is most special to me about for our anniversary are the common, ordinary, random details that surround us, that are our lives. Even a pretty good love story is just another pretty good love story, and this is beautiful. And any clarity about where things may have begun or ended or will begin or will end is really just nonsense. It all just is. I adore the way Samantha says this in the last line of the poem. Absolutely spot on. For Our Anniversary by Samantha DeFlitch. Forgive me, I can't give name to the evening when we became we. Maybe it was that night the sky was all done up in haze and blue, and I have you standing there, you with your grill tongs clacking, and the cat making a mad dash for chicken. I am sick, I said, like it mattered, as all around us the loudness of love took up its living. Look, across the street, someone jerk-started their neighbor's lawnmower. In the North Country, a man opened his pane before his family, and his family took it up. And also, down in Pennsylvania, an old woman carried an old dog into the yard, gently, so the dog could see the stars. I love you like I love gas stations, I said. This made sense to you, and so this was how we were. Bright lives slogging through the plague year, dropped in the middle of all the pretty good love stories of the world. All highway and no on-ramp.
My name is Alice Lee Timmons, from South Berwick in southern Maine, inland a bit from the shore. And I find myself drawn to poet Morris Manning's poem, The Watching Tree. Manning is from Kentucky. His poetry often soaks up the natural landscape and soft lilt of his native state, a place where his father told stories of growing up a farm boy. Manning's work is infused with the voices of his own kin, from his parents to his great-great-grandmother. I like to think that the final lines of The Watching Tree may echo such an ancestral voice. The Watching Tree. So I went out into the blue, carrying my love dream in my bare hands like a bird. A bird I'd found alone and had to raise. And now it was time to find the tree. And we found it, me and the sweet bird. We found the tree under the blue, as if the blue had dreamed the tree to be on the hill, a watching tree, to watch the other dream. And so it saw me coming up the hill with a clutch of feathers in my hands, and the wind bent down a branch, and I set the bird in the crook. But the tree shook itself and said, get up here too, you carrier. So I sat on the branch, and boing, the branch sprang up, and the sweet bird chirped twice and fluttered around me singing. And the other hills rose on, and the river returned some blue to the blue above, the bigger blue that had dreamed the watching tree on the hill. So I said, excuse me, tree, is this still my dream? And the tree swayed and said, honey, 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 there's only one.
Hi, I'm Joanne Connolly. Susan Brown was inspired to become a poet at 10 because a neighbor saw something in her and gave her the book Archie and Mehitabel, a conversation between a reincarnated cockroach author and a cat experiencing its 9th life. As an adult, Susan Brown is inspired by Lorca's idea of duende, which is a quality of passion and inspiration connected to Andalusian gypsy music or deep song, which eventually became flamenco music. I love this idea of deep song as I'm a singer and choral director, and even though I live in York, Maine, I love gypsy and flamenco music and love visiting Latin countries and speaking Spanish. Susan Brown's poetry has appeared in publications such as Plowshares, Poetry, The Sun, and Subtropics, to name a few. She has published 3 books of poetry. She lives in Chico, California. I'd like to share a poem by Susan Brown entitled Chance Meeting. I know him. That man walking toward me up the crowded street of the city. I've lived with him 7 years now. I know his fast stride, his windy wheat-field hair, his hands thrust deep in his jacket pockets, hands that have known my body, touched its softest part, caused its quick shudders and slow releasings. I've seen his face, above my face, his mouth smiling, moaning, his eyes closed and opened. I've studied his eyes, the brown turning gold at the centers. I've silently watched him lying beside me in the early morning. I know his loneliness, like mine, human and sad, but different, too. His private pain and pleasure I can never enter. Even as he comes closer past trees and cars, trash and flowers, steam rising from the manhole covers, gutters running with rain, he lifts his head. He sees me. We are strangers again. And a rending music of desire and loss. I don't know him, courses through me. And we kiss and say, it's good to see you. As if we haven't seen each other in years, when it was just a few hours ago, and we are shy then, not knowing what to say next. Thank you.
thank you, Emma Dawson Webb, John Shea, Alice Timmons, and Joanne Connolly, for your poems and your voices. And thank you, Kent, for closing with "'Swonderful" by George Gershwin. Please join us next time, April 21st, for our Younger Poets show. Rice Pudding Poetry is a project of Rice Public Library in Kittery, Maine, and we thank all the good people there who are busy planning for the reopening of the enlarged and redesigned library building this spring. Thank you, too, to sound engineer Douglas Green and to graphic designer Sophie Green. Our theme music is Pussy Hat, composed by Kent Allen and Joyce Anderson. I'm Kimberly Green, and I'm most thankful for you, dear listeners, near and far. Take good care, everyone. We hope this helping of rice pudding has been nourishing for all the good work you do in the world. Bye for now. Thank you.